like to call the April 1st meeting of the Community Development Committee to order. And City Manager, would you please take the roll?
Councilman Miles?
Here.
Councilman Cullicott?
Here.
And Ray Pasquale and myself, Chief Franks, are both present. All present.
Okay. First item is the approval of the minutes from the March 4th meeting. I was not present, so I will have to abstain. But do the minutes look in order?
Well, so I have a question. So the packet that I got on Friday, did that have the minutes in it? The email packet?
Yeah, it did.
No, I missed it, so I did not have a chance to read it.
They're in the packet here, but they're just, yeah, they're attached as a second attachment to the meeting thing. Yes. Not in the hard copy. They weren't in the hard copy.
Yeah.
They were in the email I sent to you.
Yeah, I only printed out the agenda. I'm sorry. It's my
We can just fault. Hold off on that if you want. It's up to you.
I don't know what the right process is for that.
It's up to you, whatever you want to do, you guys. It's here, just some reaction minutes you guys can say. We want to hold off for approval, whatever you want to do.
I'll hold off, and I'll make sure that I read them by next meeting.
Okay. So we'll now move on. Oh, public comment. There's nobody present for public comment, so we'll move on to new items. The first item under new items is an administrative wireless telecommunications facility permit, 10432 Jerome Street. Staff, do you have a presentation?
Sure. This is a small cell wireless facility by AT&T Mobility. They are proposing to add some equipment to an existing wind utility pole within the public right-of-way on Dole Park Road. The address, 10432 Jerome Street, is the nearest physical address to the pole. They're going to use, unlike the one that we approved the last CDC meeting, this one, they're not going to do what they call a drop and swap. They're going to use the existing pole and install a horizontal arm to hold two primary things. One is the antenna itself. It's a cylindrical antenna. And then on the other end of this horizontal arm is what they call the remote radio unit, basically this transceiver. And basically that is the project in a nutshell. They're not going to have an above ground pedestal. I did write a denial letter to AT&T saying that the city prohibits those from being installed. So what they'll need to do is to put everything underground. Mm-hmm. And assuming this project gets through, the thing that they would need to do is to get an encroachment permit since they're going to be working in the public right away prior to it doing any work to that pole.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
Because Southern California Edison owns that pole, is that the last month when we talked, when we discussed the
The one on tap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did Southern California Edison own that pole too?
Or yes.
So is that standard for the cellular companies to use an existing?
Well, at least in the city of Miller Park, we own probably two in the entire city.
Oh, okay.
The rest of it is owned by Southern California Edison.
Oh, okay.
I guess the arrangement is that they own it, AT&T will lease the pole from them.
Yeah. It's my understanding other utilities also lease space
sure.
on the poles,
sure.
like the,
It's like a billboard.
That's how your meter readings are done, it's how now external meter readings and whatnot, yes.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions? Several months ago we adopted an ordinance that Councilman Pitts championed for these small cells.
Yes.
Is with the conditions that you've described to put the the equipment underground and so forth, is that this project otherwise in conformance?
Yes.
If it's otherwise in conformance, why is that being brought before the CDC? Isn't that just ministerial approval?
It is ministerial in nature. We just want to bring it before the CDC to let you know. It's basically
okay,
so height visibility, because it's something that we could do. But at the same time, it's a matter of clarifying that this is what's going on,
okay,
that the council's aware of the projects and things. We really don't have a whole lot of say-so, except we can stop them from doing certain elements, design elements of it. And so this is sort of one of those things where we don't have much control. And in fact, if we don't react to it within a certain time frame, it's automatically approved. Mm-hmm. So we would rather be proactive and take actions and advise the council and move forward.
And for this one, too, we did send out courtesy notice letters to everyone close to this project. Six properties along, it's on the back side, so there may be one or two that fronts onto Villa Park and the rest of them on the back side. Mm-hmm. At least the ones that we think will be seen from the properties in the area, but there were a total of six that we sent to. Mm-hmm. We haven't received any comments for or against it. So.
Okay, so this is really more of an information item then?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Is this a 5G or microcell or?
I believe
5G.
Oh, it is a 5. Okay. We were discussing, Councilwoman Miles and I were discussing that just before the meeting. I just read an article yesterday that we're probably going to see more requests for these 5Gs because they have a much shorter transmission distance.
Right. And we don't have particularly good coverage anyway in Villa Park with some of the AT&T is particularly weak in the area, so I'm not surprised. Verizon's had our most recent requests, but AT&T, if you go through, I have AT&T and I lose coverage halfway through the city if I'm driving around. But you're right, that they are trying to expand because it's a enhancement to the service to the provider. As a service provider, to be able to say they're doing it is important.
Yeah.
So.
And my understanding too is, although there's some providers that we do have drop calls for, I have AT&T and I have it all the time. I'm beginning to think that's what I pay for at the service. But there are gap coverages in the city, but then more importantly, it's what they call a more capacity, because there's live streaming, there's more to than just making a call now.
Yeah.
It's the capacity. And so they're trying to beef up the capacity to carry more of a load, transmit and receive more of a load. Mm-hmm. But in this city, it's tough because there's not a whole lot of places you can put a cell tower, if you will. So they're looking at these opportunities to use wood utility poles to make that happen, to improve the service.
Can I ask a silly question, I guess? If like you mentioned that if we didn't respond, then by default they would do it anyways, approve it anyways. Do we actually have the ability to say no?
We certainly can make the legal argument. Do we win in court? I mean, I think we had this discussion in the ordinance, adoption of the ordinance. So we sort of presume we have, and that's sort of how we're doing it. And we work with the companies to tell them that we have, But would we necessarily win in court? I think Todd said we may have some difficulty, but, depending on the judge. But we're just sort of preemptively saying, we have the ability to say no.
Because, not to split hairs, but since we don't own the pole that it's getting put on, do you argue that you own this space, that it's up in the air? You know what I mean?
We could deny the encroachment permit.
Okay.
We have some abilities to make life difficult.
Okay. Just a question.
Some ability to affect the project.
Okay.
And that's primarily what we can do. I mean, we can, if they want to make a deal with the Edison, they can probably make a deal with Edison. And at some point, maybe they will if they advance technology. So far, they don't need to have anything, but
thanks.
We'll see.
Just to,
Yeah, per the code, when we're talking about administrative wireless telecommunication facilities ordinance, there are two criteria. One, the facility is a small cell located in the public right-of-way, so we check that box. Number two, that it qualifies as an eligible facilities request, which it is. I looked up what the definition of it is, and it does meet it. I mean, we're not increasing the height of the pole. That's the main thing. And so what they're doing is modifying or co-locating equipment on an existing pole, which already has equipment on it. So that is a form of co-location. So it checked that box. We checked that box off. And so there's really, like Steve said, the only thing that we can weigh in on is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And this is like the bare minimum they could put in.
They're not, as long as they don't do above ground.
Yeah. That we have a say in. And so, you know, what I've asked is, you know, at least paint it out to match the color of the pole, you know, tuck in all the wires that would be hanging that would be visible. I mean, a lot of cities are doing the same thing. When I was in working as a planner for the city of Irvine, they have some pretty stringent requirements there.
But they own the poles.
But they own most of the poles.
Yeah. That's a different ballgame. We could negotiate whatever we want on our own poles.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. We'll move on to the next item, which is municipal code amendment, garage door height status.
Yeah, this is a draft. We talked about it last month, and we deferred so that Councilman Cullicott could be here and sort of talk it through. This is his impetus. This is, again, the very initial draft. He's spoken to me about a couple of other items that he's talking about probably wanting to put into it, but I'll defer to him.
Okay. Yes, there were a couple items that I've been discussing with our planner for several months. One is we seem to get a lot of requests for variances for garage door height, and another which we routinely approve, and both here at the CDC as well as at the council. And we also get a lot of we've received requests for RV garages, which also require variances and in some cases CUPs, which we seem to, with minor exceptions, we seem to routinely approve those as well. So kind of the rule of thumb is if you're getting a lot of requests for the same thing and you're routinely approving them, maybe it's time to go back and review the zoning requirements and update, you know, to be consistent with the city policy. And I think garage door heights and RV garages, we should really address as two separate items. But the one we've got before us today is the garage door height. Typically, what do we see in terms of requests for garage door height? What is the, like, just an 8-foot garage door height?
Yeah, that seems to be the standard now, Councilman. I polled a couple of garage door manufacturers in the area, and they say typically folks that want to replace their garage door are asking for doors that are more than 7 feet in height, mm-hmm. More likely 8, mm-hmm. maybe even more than that. And with the popularity of the higher profile vehicles, the Sprinter vans, SUVs, that sort of thing, there's more of a demand for providing a bigger opening for the garage, if the structure is allowed. And as a result, they need bigger garage doors. So, but I would say that, you know, and I had asked Bill, what was it back in the day, and he said, yeah, usually about 7, but more likely now, today, it would be 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if 8 would cover most of the requests that for increased garage door heights, I'd like to suggest that we just stick with 8-foot height. And also, particularly as you get into the R1 area where you have smaller houses and so forth, a garage door height of, let's say, 10 feet or 12 feet might look out of place. But 8 feet, you're still within the ballpark. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Well, so just so we're all clear, so if I'm building a house and I want my garage door to be 7 feet 11.5 inches, I don't have to apply for a CUP, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
If this were approved.
As the code is written today, you wouldn't be required. The code says
anything,
8 feet or more.
Right. So
sorry, what did you just say?
Eight feet or more
is what the code
so
says.
So if she's half an inch under,
then I don't need a CUP.
Right.
Okay, so right now you can go up to 8 feet.
Right. No,
so
you can go to 7.
Yeah.
7.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe we make it like 8.1, 8 feet 1 inch, because otherwise you're still going to end up with, if it's the standard, then anybody that wants to go higher than 8, it covers the 8 feet 1 inch covers anything greater than that. But for all those people that want to do an 8-foot garage door, they don't have to apply for a CUP.
Yeah.
That's kind of my, you know what I mean? Because it sounds like we're still going to end up with people going, well, wait.
Language would be 8 or more would require CUP.
Well, she's saying instead of 8.4, she was saying 8 foot 1 inch or more, or 8 foot 6 inches or more, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, 8 foot 1 inch or greater, you'd have to get up.
So instead of
variance.
Saying garage door is 8 feet, it would be 8 foot 1 inch or more.
Yeah.
Because it sounds to me like we're trying to eliminate the need to come and get a CUP for 8 feet. Well, if you say 8 feet or more, you're still going to have to get a CUP. So if you say 8 foot 1 inch, then I can build my 8 foot garage door and I don't have to come to a CUP. I'm staying under the 8.1 for a CUP.
Right.
That's
anything taller than that would require a CUP.
Yes. But does that satisfy kind of what you're seeing?
Yeah.
Is that the trend is 8 feet?
Well, that's what my understanding is. That's why I was asking, if 8 feet would, an 8 foot, changing the building code requirement to 8 foot 1 inch would take care of most of the requests for, was it a variance or a CUP?
It would be a CUP.
Okay, so that's
changed.
Yeah.
In most cities, it would be a variance.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. So, let's see, is there anything else?
Down here it talks about design standards. That's all new, or what do we have right now?
That's something that I drafted up. It's a compilation of what I found in my research, what other cities are doing. They were hard to find. There's not a whole lot of cities that have design guidelines for tall garage doors. So I'm thinking if we had a set of guidelines or design codes, if you will, as part of the ordinance for garage doors that were taller, then we have a little bit more control as to what it should be.
These are for the CUP. These are for if it is above, it needs a CUP.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything less, they don't have to deal with it.
Right.
Yeah.
So right now, the way it stands at 8 feet or more, do we have design guidelines for the garage door?
No.
And this
that's a case-by-case basis, and I think
I thought we weren't allowed to be to contribute to regulate their design.
You can do what you want to do as a council.
But historically, we have not.
Historically, we have not.
Okay.
Councilman Cullicott has had some discussions with Ray, so he was trying to start with a starting point of some. I don't want to speak for you, but I think that's what he was trying to get, some design guidelines that you were, or something that would.
Yeah, if you're going to have a larger garage door, try to make it fit, because it's going to be a larger design feature on your house.
Totally agree. However, I think we're on the cusp of what you might think fits, I may not think fits. You know what I mean? So it's very subjective on. Right? Like, I may look at a garage door that I'm putting in at 8.2 inches, and I'll be like, this is awesome, I love it. And you could go, this is awful. So, you know what I mean? So I'm a little hesitant about the...
Let's look at what...
It's in the eye of the beholder.
Let's look at what we're suggesting. We're not trying to tell them how to design. If you can have... We have a wide variety of different architectural styles. But let's say if you have a mid-century modern garage door on a Spanish-style house, it doesn't relate to the overall architectural design of the residence. Just saying, look, make it look like it's part of your residence. Whatever your residence looks like, just make it look like it's part of it. It should be the same paint color. So that means if your house is gray, you don't have a purple garage door. It's, and believe it or not, we've gone through fads in Southern California where we have had purple houses and purple garage doors and stuff. I mean, wild colors.
But isn't this creeping up on like homeowners associations where you?
No, it's just saying, whatever you do, just make sure it fits in with whatever your house is. You know, if you've got a purple house with, you know, zebra stripes on it, mm-hmm. It shouldn't have, you know, make it look like part of the existing residence.
Right, that's the one I agree. As far as coming from the same paint color palette, I don't know if I...
Councilwoman, it's pretty typical when we do, and room additions don't typically come to the city council, CDC or city council, as long as it meets all of the development standards. Some of the standard notes that I put on is that the addition has to match the exterior finishes of the existing home.
So it's normal
to the greatest
that
extent possible, unless you're like remodeling the entire and you're removing the skin of the existing residence to meet or to match the room addition.
No. Homeowners Association would say, you know, would specify the color and all the other stuff.
So let
we're
me
not,
ask
we're
you
just
guys
saying
this.
Make it look like part of the residence, so it's not like, you know, an appendage.
I understand. Yeah. So let me ask this though. So let's, how does one go about? Let's say there's a house that's been, you know, built or remodeled, or whatever, and let's say the neighbor says, well, I don't think that it's from the same color palette, right? Because to me, it doesn't match. How do you regulate that, I guess, is what I'm saying. How do you actually go and, like, if we're going to have these as guidelines or whatever, then don't we also have to have a plan on how we're going to be able to regulate and enforce
typically
it?
Typically, we've done through plan check.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the plan check.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we would see, and they'll propose what they're going to do in plan check, so Ray would put the kind of notations on there that it must be from the same palette, et cetera, and they would be their obligation to...
And then Bill would go out there to confirm that it is, in fact, built in accordance with the approved plans.
Well, I'd be interested to see what the other council members think of this, because I just don't, and I agree with number one. Obviously, you don't want that, you know, modern garage door on a Spanish style, although some people may find that eclectic. I don't know. But I would be interested to see what the other council people think, because it just is, to me, sorry, it's just starting to touch a little bit on...
There's one or two ways you could do it. You could make it as part of the codified ordinance, or just have it as a separate, like we do with the design guidelines. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we were just trying to accommodate the sort of the initial direction from the council member who sponsored this.
I think a design guidelines are not mandatory. They're just, you know, encouraging the project proponent to, you know, these are things we're going to be looking for. You know, we encourage you, you know, again, we've got a wide range of different architectural styles throughout the city. We're very, you know, we're unique on that, but you want to make sure that whatever you add on to the property is consistent with the property.
One thing that a design guideline, we couldn't do anything if they didn't do it as a design guideline. So the difference is if you just have a guideline. If you have a design standard, you have a more enforceable type of situation.
So then this word would have to be changed from standard to guideline.
Depending on what the council wants.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But guidelines would be something more, nothing more than
this is what we would like. And I agree with that. But again, this goes, if we agree, this can go on to council and be at the next agenda, next council meeting, right?
The other thing you may, I don't have it in the draft, it was something that came up when I was thinking about it, is you can allow for a taller garage door without a CUP if you set it back further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Councilman Rossini mentioned something about that at the last meeting.
And we would have to adjust for distance based on the size of the lot.
I think it's good if people want taller garage doors that they have to come to the council, because it kind of keeps us in check on what's going on, in my opinion. Just so we're aware, and it allows us to notify neighbors and stuff.
I guess I was, I'd suggest, you know, the 8 foot, 1 inch, mm-hmm. because it's not that much of a change. And it's just one less hoop that somebody has to jump through if mm-hmm. they want to do a, you know, a minor modification to their property.
Nope, I agree with that.
So.
Did you want us to change the draft to say minimum design standards or guidelines?
Guidelines is fine by me.
Thank you, yeah, okay. I think guidelines is.
Included as part of the amendment to the ordinance?
Just put guidelines.
Okay.
So that would be, I guess,
but
garage.
Still be part and parcel of this ordinance.
Yeah, that's fine.
Of the 8.1, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so the guidelines only come into play if you're going above 8.1.
Right.
8 foot, 1 inch.
Yeah. I suspect most people would do these things anyway. I mean, they wouldn't paint their garage door differently, whatever.
I agree.
Okay. So the recommendation by the, that should go forth to the city council is that the CDC recommends approval of the new ordinance to allow for garage doors up to 8 feet, 1 inch, with these design guidelines for anything
greater
than that.
Okay.
And that'll be a CDC recommendation, not a staff recommendation.
Did you want to, you mentioned too, you want to talk about the RVs separate?
Yeah, that's something that I'd like to start working with staff on is we've had a number of requests as you for RV garages, and some of them have worked out very nicely. They've been well integrated, and others have been not so well integrated, and neighbors complain, but nobody wants to confront their neighbor, or most people don't. We saw one last council meeting where some neighbors came out and said, "Look, you know, this, I don't want to look at that." But in my experience being on this committee the past 5 years is that the RV garages are routinely approved. But maybe my thought was that if we could develop some kind of a general standard, you know, or something, so that they don't have to come before the council every time, and yet on the other hand would be protective of the adjacent residents. So I think we already have a requirement that if they have to notify all the adjacent residents within, is it 300 feet or 500 feet?
Yeah, if it's a discretionary application that they're applying for, like a CUP or a variance, yeah, it would be a public hearing.
Okay.
They have to come before city council.
Okay. Okay, we certainly wouldn't want to take that away, because we, you know, something as unusual as an RV garage can have a disruptive impact on a neighborhood. What I was thinking of is that if we had a requirement that the proposals for RV garages have to be, we're not going to tell them what to make it look like, but just ask that they that it be designed by and stamped by a registered architect, so that whatever they design, as long as it fits.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen RV garages that have been designed by architects and they look very nice. They're not obtrusive. We've seen those that are designed by the contractor, and they can be disruptive to a neighborhood. And also the that RV garages be limited to the E4 zones. I don't know if we want to encourage RV garages in the R1 zone where you have smaller lots.
What's the size difference between an R1 and an E4?
Well, that gets a little complicated. Generally an E4 is supposed to be a half acre or larger. Mm-hmm. Most of the city is zoned E4. But we have smaller lots, like in the southwest corner of the city and like the neighborhood directly across San Diego, where you have smaller lots. Those are R1 lots. But we do have, when they established the city, when we first incorporated in 1962, everything was zoned E4, regardless of what size lot you have. So we have a number of E4 lots that are less than 20,000 square feet. So they're not what they call a non-conforming lot size. We've made some accommodations over the past couple of years to try to address that.
What's the, so if I have an R1 lot and I have an RV, where do I park it?
Most people with a R1 lot in most cities go to a rental yard and park their RV in a, and you see them around.
Because we're not allowed to park in our driveways, correct? RVs?
Not for, I think it's,
72 hours.
Yeah.
And so if I have a side area, am I allowed to pull it? Like if this is my house, here's the street, and I have room right here, am I allowed to park it here?
Yes.
As long as the surface is paved.
Okay. I don't know about the, again, I think I'd like to have other input. I don't know about restricting the R1 people from being able to build a...
Councilman, if I may make a suggestion, would you, rather than having a E4, R1, or restricting the RV parking garages in R1 by virtue of the zoning designation, how about like a minimum lot size?
Yeah, and I guess you get into your maximum lot coverage as well, because RV garages are pretty large. You may exceed pretty quickly exceed your maximum lot coverage in building size.
Yeah. Right.
So it may be pretty much a moot point anyway.
Is it still, what was it, like 33%? What was it, 33%?
32%. 32%? Now, for a 20,000 square foot lot, that doesn't seem... I get your point, limited to E4 zones, but there are E4 zones that are, and this is the exercise that we had gone through about 2 years ago, where we had to redesignate some E4 zones that were legal but not conforming. They were less than 20,000 square foot minimum. We have some that are like 16, mm-hmm. Maybe 13, 5.
I think we've got maybe a couple that are E4, but there are only 12,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking of, like, let's say that I'm an empty nester and I had a 4-bedroom living house on a little lot and my kids have left and I want to get rid of two of my bedrooms and add an RV garage so my husband and I can go go see the world, right? So now I might have the same square foot size house, but I'm only in an R1, but I got rid of my 2 bedrooms and I made an RV garage. See what I mean? Like, I don't want to restrict the R1s from having...
Yeah. And that was a good point that Councilman brought up. I mean, it's pretty much dictated by the coverage. You may want to have, an RV garage, but then it's predicated on whether or not you have enough land. You can meet the 32% square footage.
Yeah, and the thought is that this would be some standard requirements so that if somebody wants to build an RV garage, okay, if you go through these steps, then you're good to go. But, hey, if you've got an R1 lot, you want to do something different, you can still come in for a CUP. You're not prohibited from doing that.
True.
It's just that, we're going to, for the majority of people that are going to be building RV garages, they're probably going to have an E4 lot, and they're, we're just trying to, the objective is to try to make things easier, but also to protect the adjacent residents.
Well, like you said, I think it ends up kind of canceling it out, because if you go based on the lot coverage, then it's really...
For R1s, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, since I've been here, I've had to turn away maybe 3, because they just couldn't make it fit.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't make it fit because of...
Setback, lot coverage. there's a couple of them that didn't want to go through the conditional use permit because the garage door height was taller than...
Yeah. Now, in your research, have you found any other cities that have... some standard requirements for RV garages?
Not RV garages. Yeah. Just doors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it is, in most cases, the first thing you see when you're driving down the street. And then, to go more than 8 feet, I mean, it dominates the street scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if done nicely, it looks really cool.
But you can mask it through these design guidelines and architectural treatments and such.
Yeah,
if it's done correctly.
Yeah, it's been done.
Yeah, some of those pictures that we saw last council meeting, some really tasteful ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's next?
Okay. Well, we need to provide staff some direction. If you could take some of those concepts and... come back to us. Have you had a chance to look to see if anybody else has got RV garage, some kind of a standard requirement for RV garages?
I can look.
Residential areas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I can
see how other cities are addressing this.
Yeah. More than likely, the cities will go through a design review.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, and what they're obviously looking for is what we're trying to achieve here is that it's not something that's like an afterthought.
Yeah.
When you look at the whole scope of the house or the property, that it blends in well and it doesn't look like it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. I guess we see a lot of RV garage, or we've seen a number of RV garage requests over the past 5 years that I'm aware of, because we've got all these E4 lots, which, this is an unusual community, so. Okay. So the next item is, we go back past the RV garage amendment? Information items, staff?
We've got the February and March building code, building safety reports, which are basically the building permits over the last 2 months. You'll see the activity is pretty constant. We're hovering around $1 million worth of valuation for both years, for both months. You see the variety.
Well, considering that it's, we're averaging about $1 million of modifications every month, I'd like to make a motion that we change the city bird from the hummingbird to the jackhammer.
Yeah.
That's a motion.
We actually get more
April Fools.
Very funny.
We actually get more phone calls about when the starting time.
Yeah.
For that very reason. What time can they start construction? The project start? We get a lot of those phone calls.
Question. What is on the first page of the code enforcement violations, TC? First one.
32819.
TC, and then it looks like it's supposed to say it public, but it's got a comma instead of an L.
I'm not sure. Maybe it's a temporary canopy.
What was the business in the garage?
He is running a garage.
He's running a garage in his garage. He's fixing cars,
motorcycles. He's painting motorcycles. He's doing a lot.
Huh?
He and Bill have had some verbal go-rounds on the phone. He says he's just doing it for friends. But Bill has pictures of him doing it for, he's got lots of friends.
This is the one on Harrison?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's got lots of friends. We have a neighbor that's complained and taken pictures as well. So months and months of this has gone on.
Okay.
So we've sent 3 notices of violation to him. So we're going to start finding him. Like I say, he's arguing that he's allowed to do it as, you know, work in his garage. Well, he's got a trailer with auto parts supplies that pulls up.
Oh, geez.
Oh, really?
And he has paints and things, and, you know, just that he's painting out front. I mean, it's really clearly a business of some sort.
Hmm. Okay.
Violating AQMD rules.
He's violating a lot of rules.
Any updates on the Charles over on Center Street with all the cars out in front?
Yeah, I want to say it's 10101 Center. If you'll see it there, the case remains open, no change. And the case opens, we've opened it again. We have to work through the courts. We have to get a notice of court order to allow us to go onto the property because he's threatened to sue us if we don't. So Bill can't go online to go out there, check the licenses. Because he's saying they're licensed and tagged, and we're saying they're not. He says, if you go on property, I'm basically going to, you know, file with him. So this is very contentious, but we have the sheriff working with us, and are going to court and actually going to get a court order of ours to do that.
Okay.
He has done nothing to move his cars. I don't believe he's even living there. Nobody's living there. He says he can't live there, but I don't think there's anybody there. It has to be towed. Vehicles are different. When we tow a vehicle, they never get it back. They're done. They're ours. They get sold at auction. They're no longer.
Does he know that?
Well, we told him that, yeah. That's why he's sort of fighting.
Because
are classics and blah, blah, blah.
I know his Phantom. He's always talks about his Phantom.
The Rolls Royce? Mm-hmm. Well, interesting. You know, I walk Louie down Center Street quite often, and when it was raining, the window on his Rolls Royce was wide open. The window on his Lincoln Continental was wide open. And this was for weeks.
I think he lives in Orange somewhere. He's not there. And he's writing this. Oh, my gosh. He's writing us these 4-page missives in handwriting that you can't read. We don't even know what they say. We try and read them because you get halfway through them, and he's just, they're rants. Much like other city residents we have. And he's... but it is, the sheriff is, we're working with the sheriff, we're working with the courts, we will get the court order, and we'll take action, because they're not moving, they're not appropriate. If you drive down there, nothing's changed for months.
This precedes my term on council. I mean, this has been going on for years. Mm-hmm. In fact, Rick Barnett got involved back when he was on council. Mm-hmm.
And they're actually claiming that this current council we're being discriminatory because of his health conditions and knowing that he can't do anything, so we're pressing it. He said, no, we've been pressing this for months.
Years.
Well, you have the documentation that shows.
That's why we'll go to court and we'll get what we need, but it is something that's going to be, you know, he'll show up here. You weren't here when he showed up with his mother's picture.
Yes.
And he had all his friends there with him, and he... had alcohol his mom's picture, the dice, and he told us that, you know, like in her memory, we should be, and the prior councils have forgiven him, but we should do the same, and we should do the same, and in the past they have.
Yeah.
But it is unsightly. We do get complaints from residents.
Yeah, if you just sit down and talk with Charles, he's just a really nice guy, but it's like, Charles, do something.
This is Bill Park, take care of your property.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of those beautiful cars.
They're nice cars, but he tells us that there's lots of issues there. We're working on the vehicles right now. He's not doing anything on the landscaping either. So we have cleaned up that. Some of it, the weeds, we took care of.
Okay. What else is... Mendocino continues to drag on at a snail's pace.
Yes. We are working with owners and whatnot on that.
What's his latest story? You're not familiar. The one in Mendocino is not far from you.
Right. Yeah. No, I've seen it.
Yeah.
I think we declared it a public nuisance, so we are moving forward. But every time we start to do something, he does a little bit. And you have to re-notice him, so it's a cat and mouse game.
Yeah. You're talking catty corner from me, right?
18592 Mendocino.
Yeah, the little next to the Brown, next to Mr. Brown, right over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Down on the other. Yeah, Mr.
The,
Brown is on the end,
and he's
on the corner.
Yeah.
Other end. Yeah.
So what was the just ignorant? What was the public nuisance? The fact that it's just taken so long?
The public nuisance is we gave him a list of things he needed to do, and he didn't do those.
Okay.
So when you don't do those, we then turn around and say, okay, now we're going to declare it a nuisance if you haven't taken action. The council confirmed that there was a nuisance, gave us authority to move forward. At that point, we have to give him notice that the council declared it a nuisance, and you have to do things. So if you'll see the note there, it says owner makes small improvements. So every time he makes an improvement, we have to go verify what improvement he's made, check it off against a list, and give him the revised list of what needs to be done. So he knows the game.
So can I just, for kicks and giggles, what were some of the items that he needed to fix that he had?
Oh, it's everything from weeds to trash out front to, et cetera, et cetera. It's really a mess. And, I mean, it's just... You temporarily take care of something, and you know it just shuts us down, and it's kind of,
right.
Bill gets frustrated with it. But we're continuing to work on it, and he's,
This house has been under construction for at least 4 years. I don't remember when the exact date of that it was opened,
since
but
I've been here.
Pardon?
Yeah. Since I've been here. I plan checked out the plans.
And how long have you been here?
4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, came back at one point in time and asked to put a fence in his front yard, which I think we mistakenly approved the council. But
he's got a building code violation there now, so that's another thing is what Bill went out and inspected, some work he's done, which is not up to, so there's another set of, it's one thing, and then we'll notify him, and then he has time to fix that, and Bill goes out and checks him, and he may have taken care of it, and if he does, then we have to, move on to the next.
Okay.
And then there's that house on the corner of Cedar Hill and Lincoln. That's been a problem for 18 or 19 years. Are you familiar with that one?
Is that the one on the corner that she has all the signs that says like no trespassing?
Yeah.
And stuff? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all dead in front.
You mentioned it to Bill Tarrant, and he nearly goes into leave her alone, she's a nut, or something. Anyway,
is this the lady who gardens in the middle of the night?
I don't know if she gardens in the middle of the night, but...
Isn't she the ex-NBA?
Yeah,
WNBA.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But
she's a lawsuit. She has come in here with a lawyer and threatened, if we get on her, she's threatened the people next to her, saying that they put up cameras to monitor her house, so she sued them for a restraining order. We've gone to court with them, so this is a very challenging case. And the most recent one was that the neighbor across the street, that there was residue from the trees on the street, so and the sidewalk and or the area right there. And so we went over and said, "No, you got to clean that up." And she adamantly refused. And somebody else blew it on; it wasn't hers. Which Bill went out there and took pictures, and she's confrontational to say the least. Mm-hmm. But we continue to work on that one as well. And that one, that's just I don't even know what to say to that one.
Whatever.
She will sue us. There's no question she's going to sue us. It's when?
The house on the corner of Taft and Center, the one where he was cutting down the trees and we all...
Oh, yes.
So whatever happened with that?
Those are within his right-of-way. They're in his property line. So he has the right to do them. We said, you can kind of do what you want. We'd kind of like to know what you're going to do. Just so we know, so we can tell residents that you're going to make it nice, look nice. He said when he decides, he'll come in and tell us. And he came in, then he stopped, came in the next Monday, as you'll recall. We went out, physically measured, everything's within his property line, so he can do certainly whatever he wants to do. It's not even in the public right of way. So he said that when he decides what he's going to do, he's going to do so, he'll come in and tell us.
Was he upset?
No, he understood that we were getting complaints and that, that he sort of stopped as a courtesy.
Yeah.
I mean, he really didn't even have to. I mean, he technically could have gone ahead. We couldn't have done much about it at the end of the day. He came in. He understands that, he wants to make the house look good. He wants to make it look good. So he said, I don't own the property to make it look bad, so I'm going to do something nice. People just want these trees, and they're mine, and they're ruining my fence, and they're ruining, causing me damage to my pipes and things, so I'm going to change them. Mm-hmm. So we can't very well say much to him at that point. Mm-hmm.
The ones along Taft, though, are within our right of way.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not doing it with those.
Yeah.
It's the ones on center. Center.
Yeah, I just walked by them this morning. Yeah, I think the pine trees along Taft were planted by the Villa Park Women's League way back in the day.
Yes.
Okay.
But he's been very courteous, and he's been very, you know, he did incur extra costs, because we know that we talked to the landscaper, whoever was taking him out, had to come back the next day and set up, the next week, and set up some trips, but
okay. Street maintenance?
We are back within... in progress. You should be seeing people out there within a week or so. We're waiting right now on the concrete guys who have started another job. In the meantime, they were starting another job, so we said we need back over here. So it's now RJ Noble and them are now coordinating, so we should be back in process fairly quickly.
What concrete work are they working on?
They're working, not here, not in Villa Park.
Okay.
Another project of theirs they had rescheduled, so it's a redeployment where they promised starting work times and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we lost the time, and it was sort of blocked off, and then they start, the way the contractors typically work is
they want to
get their
busy.
Next project going, and they move that, because they're getting paid on that one. So we should be done in the middle of May, at the latest, end of April.
Be time to start the next one.
Yeah, but it's the rains have just affected us, that's all you can say.
Okay.
So we will post a schedule once we have a complete schedule on there. But it's not RJ Noble, it's the concrete guys who, I guess RJ Noble buys their concrete, so they have to schedule, you know, when they get it put in and deliver it and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll adjourn, and our next meeting will be Monday, May 6th at 4 p.m.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.